Today we're here with a Grammy Award-winning artist who's actually finishing his master's degree here at WMU, and he sings, composes, and he plays the piano. John Prue, welcome to WMUK.
Thanks, Keith. Great to be here.
We're so glad you're here today, John. Love to start with some music.
That's great. Yeah, so the first song I'd like to do is an original composition called Push Hands Anna that was co-written with a lyricist named K. Lawrence Dunham, and the song is about my wife Anna's experience in Taiwan studying with the Taiji master. And the chorus, because we're both from Grand Rapids, Michigan, says, push hands, Anna, push hands, Anna, push hands, Anna, from the Great Lake State. So you'll know it pretty soon. You can even sing along at home. Here it goes. There is a gal named Anna from the splendid Great Lake State. She went to Taiwan on a scholarship. They all thought she was great. She studied Mandarin Chinese. She learned to speak it well. Then she discovered Tai Chi Xuan. Here's the story I must tell. She's Push Hands Anna, Push Hands Anna, Push Hands Anna from the Great Lakes State. She's Push Hands Anna, Push Hands Anna, a Push Hands Anna from the Great Lakes State. She meets a Taiji master, and with practice every night, she aces all the moves so easily, but something just ain't right. Her teacher tells her firmly, Taiji is not a dance. You have to find your center deep inside and be mindful of your stance. Cause she's Push Hands Anna, Push Hands Anna, a Push Hands Anna from the Great Lakes State. She's Push Hands Anna, Push Hands Anna, a Push Hands Anna from the Great Lakes State. Poor Anna doesn't get it. She starts losing confidence. This silly yin-yang talk is Greek to her. She just can't make much sense. The master knows his pupil. He sees what he must do. He says, I'll teach you pushing hands, Tui Sho. Now the Tai Chi will come through. Progress is astounding. Hey, her teacher, so impressed. He claims of all the students that he's taught, she is the very best. The locals come to watch her. The news spreads far and wide. The crowd is chanting, push hands, Anna rocks. Now she wears her name with pride. Cause she's Push Hands Anna, Push Hands Anna, a Push Hands Anna from the Great Lakes State. She's Push Hands Anna, Push Hands Anna, a Push Hands Anna from the Great Lakes State. She's back home in Grand Rapids. If you ever pass that way, you may see Anna holding Taiji class out in the park one day. Her students trust their teacher. She guides them to advance. She tells them, find your center deep inside and be mindful of your stance. Cause she's Push Hands Anna, Push Hands Anna, a Push Hands Anna from the Great Lakes State. She's Push Hands Anna, Push Hands Anna, a Push Hands Anna from the Great Lakes State. Push Hands Anna, Push Hands Anna, Push Hands Anna from the Great Lakes State.
And that was great. That was super fun. So how did you get started with music?
I started on violin, actually, Suzuki violin, when I was 3 years old. Can't believe it. I was so young at the time. But Suzuki method is a really great method because, as you know, it's all by ear. So I had this little violin, and I would just listen to these records, you know, real records back then, and I would just play along with them. I didn't know what I was doing. Just like, you know, music is a language. So when you're teaching somebody to speak, you don't show them how to write first. You just say something, and they repeat it, and then
pretty soon they start speaking. And the same thing is true with Suzuki. So I was playing along with these records, and I guess I was progressing pretty quickly. My mom said I was up to like level 3 already after a couple years of studying. And I would have private lessons and group lessons and stuff like that. But I started picking up songs on the radio on piano as well. So I would sit there and play, you know, like... you know, the Lionel Richie. Is that Lionel Richie? Hello,
yeah.
Right?
Hello.
Hello.
So, you know, things like that. And so my mom was like, man, I got to get this guy to read because he's obviously picking up music. It's in his blood, but we have to get him to read. So I started piano lessons at 5. And I never took violin lessons again after that. I don't even know how to play it now. It's like it was a whole lifetime ago. I don't even know how I did it. But so I started taking piano lessons. And the first thing my piano teacher did, I spent about a year playing piano by ear without her knowing that I wasn't reading the music, because I would just have her play. So I would say, well, yeah, could you just play the song? And she'd play it. And then I'd play it exactly as she played it, just from what, hearing her do it. And then one day she caught on and she said, well, why don't you just play it? And I was like, okay. And like fumbling all over the place. And then she said, oh, okay, all right, we got to work on your reading. And so that's how that happened. And I started catching the reading up to where the ear was. And I started getting more into jazz. I picked up an Oscar Peterson cassette, and I just loved his playing, and started to go hear a local piano player named John Shea, who actually is back in Grand Rapids now with my grandfather, who was also a jazz musician. And my grandfather actually used to play a lot of Nat King Cole and a lot of jazz recordings around the house. And so I started leaning more towards jazz repertoire. So I remember my classical teachers having me do some of that kind of boogie-woogie kind of stuff, you know, and then also a composer named Claude Bowling, who kind of mixed jazz and classical together. And so that was a nice transition into that world. So I ended up going to Chicago, to Roosevelt University, where I finished my undergrad in jazz piano performance.
So when did you start singing?
So singing was, that's interesting, because it's always been in my blood. My parents both were folk singers and guitarists. And so I was involved in choirs as a kid. I did Blue Lake here in Grand Rapids, and did the International Choir. As a high school, early college, I started singing in the men's section of the boys, Grand Rapids Boys Choir. And that was great experience and training and singing like that countertenor range. And I started playing and singing at churches when I was 12 years old. So I started accompanying my mom. She was a cantor at the 5:15 Mass on Saturdays, and I would play, sit there and play, you know. But then I started jazzing it up a little bit more because I liked the jazz chords. You know, I wouldn't get too far out, but, you know. And so that's where I started playing and singing more professionally, or at least more on a bigger scale, was in churches. And then people said, hey, do you play at weddings and funerals? And, you know, then I started working kind of like after 13.
And that's kind of addictive, right? To get paid to do what you love like that.
Right, right.
So you were in Chicago at Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened there?
And there it was interesting. I met somebody who was to become a big mentor over the years, Jennifer Barnes, who at the time her maiden name was Shelton. Her dad, Don Shelton, was in the Singers Unlimited and the Hi-Los. And she happened to be at the university as the vocal jazz director. So when I moved there, it was just a pleasure to see her, because she came to the Aquinas College jazz camp that I was at one summer. And she said, she actually encouraged me first to go to Western. And so I actually did audition here as an undergrad many years ago with Zagree.
You did.
Playing some classical piece that I was terrible at because I was into jazz at that point and just couldn't, my classical chops weren't up to snuff. But but I decided to go to Roosevelt just because I don't know, I wanted to go to a bigger city, and Chicago was kind of calling me. So I ended up at Roosevelt. Jennifer ended up there, and she became my teacher, vocal teacher. I sang in the vocal jazz group there, did some arranging for the group, and then after I graduated was the assistant director and started teaching adjunct voice and piano there as well.
Wow. I mean, such a small world, right? I mean,
yeah.
Jennifer and I were in school here together.
Right.
And then Chicago, you guys meet.
Yeah, and then we moved to LA at the same time too, right around 2001.
You both did?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
For separate reasons, but we ended up in the same place again.
Wow. Well, let's hear some more music.
Great. So this is a song entitled Stuck in a Dream with Me that I wrote in Michigan. Actually, I wrote in Chicago, actually. And it was originally just a instrumental piece because I hadn't written any lyrics or anything. But when I moved to Chicago, this lyricist, the same guy who wrote Push Hands Anna lyrics, K. Lawrence Dunham, wrote these beautiful lyrics. And since I've recorded this song in 2006, it's been recorded by Mary Stallings, who's a great singer out of the Bay Area, as well as Dina Martin, who's Dean Martin's daughter, and several other singers seem to like this song. So I hope you do too. This is Stuck in a Dream with me. Careful now, don't play with my heart. I could fall in love, that may not be smart. For then, where would you be? Stuck in a dream with me. Careful now, your lips on my cheek, your hand stroking mine, the way your eyes speak could seal your destiny. Stuck in a dream with me. Funny how life goes. Can say when love is real. Yet here I am telling you how I feel. Careful now, stop leading me on. Before it's too late and all hope is gone, unless you want to be caught in a dream, lost in a dream, stuck in a dream with me.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Thanks, Keith.
What a pretty tune. So tell me about K. Lawrence Dunham. I mean, it's beautiful lyrics, and he wrote the music.
Mm-hmm.
How do you collaborate like that?
Yeah, so it's interesting. You know, he's an older gentleman. I met him through another singer that I met out there named Sherry Williams. I think I met him at one of her gigs, and we kind of hit it off, and I said, you know, I have a bunch of songs. Do you mind if I send you some and see if any speak to you and if you'd like to write any lyrics? So the first one that he wrote was Stuck in a Dream, and he sent that back right away and said, you know, I hear the lyric already.
So you've got the chords, you had the melody,
mm-hmm,
and everything.
Yeah.
And then he just hears some lyrics and just,
yeah,
man.
And he's a lyricist that really thinks about every single word. You know, like I would call him up on the phone and we'd talk, and then he'd say, okay, yeah, I'll call you right back. And then he just called back and wouldn't even say his name, and he just picks up right where he left off, you know. So anyway, I was talking, and you know, he's, oh, hey Kay, how's it going? You know, like that. he's very much in his head, but he writes these beautiful lyrics, and he really thinks about every single thing that he writes, and I appreciate that.
Oh, it's gorgeous. So you moved to LA.
Yeah.
This is what year?
2001.
Okay.
Yeah, it was actually August of 2001, so right before September 11th, actually. And my wife had just moved to Taiwan. She wasn't my wife at the time, but moved to Taiwan and was studying Mandarin for a year on a Rotary scholarship. And that's how the Push Hands Anna song came about. But during that time that she was in Taiwan, I was in LA just going out to jam sessions and trying to network as much as possible. And I started studying with a piano player there named Tamir Hendelman, who's a fantastic piano player, plays with the Clayton Hamilton Band and has his own trio, has played with Barbra Streisand, everyone. He's amazing. And so he hooked me up with some other guys that I ended up recording with, Chuck Berghofer on bass and Joe LaBarbera on drums. And those are the guys that he recommended I call. And I remember when I first called Chuck Berghofer, and he didn't know who I was, and I called him. I said, "Hi, Chuck. You know, I'd love for you to play him on my first recording." And he goes, "John who?" But anyway, we got together to rehearse. And when I told him that Joe LaBarbera was on, he goes, "Oh, okay, that's good. All right."
Right.
Because they play together all the time. So after we had the first rehearsal, then he's become a great friend of mine. And we've recorded 4 albums together, that same trio, with additions of some other musicians as well.
So living in L.A., I mean, besides the music and musicians you met, did you encounter movie stars? And, you know, people have this idea of L.A. and movie stars and celebrities. Were you around folks like that?
Yeah, of course. And when you're there at first, it's a really big deal because you feel like you know them. It's an odd sensation to be at Starbucks or something and you see somebody and you're like, wait, I think I know that person. You realize you just saw them on a show yesterday or something, you know, but they're in a hat and glasses or whatever.
Right, right.
But yeah, there's been some, I met definitely a lot, especially through some of these parties. I did a lot of these solo piano background gigs at fancy homes, especially in Beverly Hills and areas like that. And worked for a event planner who got a lot of these high-end parties. And so, you know, I'd have some of these experiences where I'd be, for example, probably the coolest party I ever played at was, I got the email and it said, show up at 7 and the president gets there at 7:30. And this is when Obama was president. And so I said, are you kidding me? He said, yeah, this is his last appearance in LA as president. And, he's doing a little, you know, question answer kind of town hall meeting at this house. And there's only 35 guests and you're just playing background piano. And I was like, oh my gosh. So anyway, I tried to be cool, you know, but, when the motorcade pulled up and he got out and I was just sitting there playing and I, you know, I had already been playing for an hour before he showed up, but I couldn't stop and take my break then. of course not.
Right.
So I just played for about 2 straight hours and just watching everything around me. It was really fascinating. And, you know, Julia Roberts was there and a bunch of people, but anyway, it was a real experience to, you know, you're sort of a fly on the wall a lot of times. It's not like you're always interacting with celebrities because you're providing a service, background piano in this case. But yeah, George Clooney was there and Samuel L. Jackson. I mean, it was a whole thing. Yeah. But it's cool that, you know, music can provide a function, in this case, background music for the president. That's cool.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that.
So you've met a lot of people out there. A lot of musicians. I know you worked with some fabulous singers. I mean, you know, legend, Anita O'Day.
Yeah, Anita O'Day, that was great. She was, I think, 83 at the time I worked with her. And this drummer who actually just passed, unfortunately, Jack LeCompte, was the one who introduced me to her. And probably the biggest compliment was after we finished with the rehearsal, Anita said, you remind me of that guy. What's his name? Peterson? Oscar Peterson? I was like, oh, wow. You know, of course, that's the first person I ended up listening to as a youngster. So it was great. We did a gig together at the Derby. This is kind of well-known club in Hollywood. And I mean, you know, she didn't have all of her facilities, but you could tell, you could get glimpses of what she used to sound like. And she was scat singing and she would do this thing with her hands, and you can't see it on the radio, but she did this thing with her hands, which it meant double time. And there's all these little cues that she just grew up doing, and Jack, the drummer, knew exactly what she was doing. And so I had to kind of follow him, and he was following her.
And then Natalie Cole?
Yeah, Natalie Cole, that was a great opportunity. Josh Nelson, who's her, who was her main piano player, she was looking for some subs when he couldn't do some of the gigs. And so I got the call to audition, and they ended up using me for on and off for about 5 years. That was great because, again, another one of my influences was her dad, of course, Nat, and used to listen to all those recordings. And I even do like a whole Nat set myself. So I love that, those tunes. And then, of course, she has great arrangers, Alan Broadbent and Nan Schwartz, and all these great arrangements in her book. So it was a real pleasure to play those arrangements and to be playing with her and the great band and doing traveling and all that. So it was a lot of fun.
And you've been working for years now with Melissa Manchester, who I know from popular music, you know, not necessarily like a jazz singer. I don't think of her like that. How long has that been going on?
Gosh, that's probably been about 5 years now as well. I got a referral again through another musician who she was looking for a keyboardist, and I got a call to sub, and she came over to rehearse, and I had transcribed this this song, Whenever I Call You Friend, and she did a duet on that, and so I learned the Peeble Bryson part, you know, and she came over, and I had already transcribed his part, so I knew the harmony part, and we sang it, and then she goes, great, next song. And it was like that. The rehearsal went that smoothly. And so after we did a couple gigs together, it just turned into more of a regular thing. And so on and off, I've been working with her, and it's been great. And then besides working together, one time I sent her one of my albums, and I said, you know, I'm also a songwriter. Obviously, you're a great songwriter. I would love to possibly collaborate with you sometime on something. And not thinking that she would say yes, but she said, yeah, love to. Can I come over sometime? So she came over, and we started writing a song together. It was right after those shootings in Newtown of that first grade class. And my daughter was the same age at the time. And so I just felt like I needed to get something out artistically. And so we were just talking about how there's so much darkness in the world right now, and we really need light, more light. And so she came up with the title of Big Light. And so I just wrote the chorus to that. And then she wrote the words, so again, it's like I wrote the music, she wrote the words. And after we demoed it, I said, you know, could we shop this around to some singers? And she said, shop it. I want to record it. And I think, oh my gosh, that's amazing. So anyway, so she was going to record it on her album, You Gotta Love the Life, which is her most recent album, but the one before. And she's like, but I'd love to do this as a duet. Who can I ask? And then she said, how about I ask Al Jarreau? I thought, what? So anyway, she asked Al Jarreau. He agreed, and they ended up recording that song. And if you look up, you can look it up online. It's just called Big Light, and there's even a video of them singing. And, you know, I'm in the studio playing with them and everything. But it was a real pleasure. Again, you don't know what's going to happen. You write a song. All of a sudden, it has this life of its own. And now the association has gotten bigger. And then after that, when I was recording my most recent album, Say It, I wanted to do another original song, and so we collaborated on another song entitled Stained Glass. And she agreed to not only write it with me, but also sing the duet with me on my latest CD.
That's great.
Yeah.
Can you do that
now? I can do it. I will do it as a solo. Even you just have to imagine Melissa singing the other part.
I would sing her part, but I don't want
to. I was going to ask you, Keith, but I don't want to put you out. Yeah, so I'll do the solo version.
Okay.
Much too delicate to hold. Oh, I remember what was then, what's now. Now I see what needed to unfold. Sun-kissed golden ribbons fell across the room. Summer, when you said goodbye, left only shattered pieces of my heart, till my haunted heart would learn to fly. And if life is full of broken pieces, jagged edges, crooked lines, left of us, I wouldn't mind. I wouldn't mind. Maybe love becomes like stained glass. Look how time has warmed its colors. New light shining through. once you said I still love you. I still love you. I still love you. I still.
Those last three chords were kind of a surprise.
Yeah?
I like those. What are those? Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yay.
See, it's kind of deceptive.
Mm-hmm. It is deceptive.
Seems like
that's exactly what it is.
Deceptive cadence.
That's right.
Yeah. That's beautiful, man. God, what a great tune. So that's from your most recent album, Say It, which is your fourth
album. Yeah, my first three were on the Max Jazz record label, but my fourth one is on Artist Share, which is like a crowdfunding label based out of New York City. And you apply to get the to become one of their artists, and you do a little proposal and say what project you'd like to work on. And I think they say they take something like four artists a year. But anyway, it's been really good. They introduce you to all their fans, and it was just submitted for the first round of the Grammy nomination, so we'll see what happens with that. That'd be cool.
So I think no one really knows how the Grammys are voted on and how they're awarded. You know, you watch the show and you wonder, how could so-and-so get a Grammy and so-and-so not get a Grammy?
Right.
And so how does this work? You've submitted for the first round.
Yeah, there's all these different rounds of Grammy nominations. So the first round is basically the cattle call of a lot of different artists that submit. And then after that, it gets narrowed down and narrowed down and narrowed down until...
And who submits that?
Well, they have these NARIS members. So it's this organization that you can become part of if you're a musician. You just have to pay some money and you can become a voting member. And so I'm not sure how many voting members there are, but there are, you know, all the different categories. And then these people vote on their favorite artist.
So to submit, do you have to be a member?
I don't believe so. Well, no, that's not true. I think you do, or you have to know somebody, because I'm not sure, because I think, or associated with a record label. So I don't think I could just do it on my own. Like the record label I'm with, Artist Share, submitted it for the Grammys,
right?
Or Max Jazz did for my last three. So,
okay. So they submit it for the first round.
Mm-hmm.
And that's you called it a cattle call. Everybody in.
Yeah, everybody's in.
And then they narrow it down from there.
Right. And then it gets to the actual Grammy nominations, which then from there they choose the Grammy. But even just to be nominated is a big, big deal.
That's right. That's what they say, right?
Yeah.
Just to be nominated is an honor.
It's true.
But if you don't get a Grammy, of course it doesn't mean you're not worthy.
No,
right?
Of course,
you
know, not. Music's not about awards. Music is about giving joy. And I mean, we would do this no matter what, right?
Absolutely.
Rewards or
absolutely.
Not.
Absolutely. But if you got one, which you do have one, it doesn't hurt, right?
It doesn't hurt. Yeah, it's nice to have some accolades and to be recognized for certain things.
Yeah.
And
so let's talk about your Grammy Award. You already have one. Tell us about that.
Well, I met another lyricist besides the one I mentioned earlier, K. Lawrence Dunham. There's another gentleman named Chan Berry, who is a lyricist and also a filmmaker and... he's very connected with a lot of musicians and recording artists and actors. And so he knew that Nancy Wilson was looking for some songs. And so he wanted to write a song specifically for her. And so, you know how there's the song Here's to Life that was written. There are certain songs that are written for people in their later years. They're looking back at their life and their career. So he came up with the title, These Golden Years. And we had Sherry Williams, the same person who introduced me to Kay, actually, do the demo of it. And we had some synth strings on it and everything to kind of give it some, warmth, and sent it to her. And right away she said, I would like to record this song. I think this is a great song. And so she recorded it on her album, Turn to Blue. And so... that's where the Grammy came from. And actually, the interesting thing is it was recorded again on a live TV for Smokey Robinson's birthday, and I got a call from NBC saying, everyone's singing Smokey Robinson's songs for this tribute to Smokey, but Nancy would like to sing your song, These Golden Years. Is that okay? Yeah. So she ended up singing it. You can look it up online. There's a video of her singing this to Smokey Robinson, and it's everybody who you'd want to hear your song is there in the audience. Stevie Wonder, everybody.
Oh,
I mean, so
gosh.
Those kind of things are cool. Again, you write a song, you don't know where it's going to go, and all of a sudden, all these people are hearing it. And then it also meant a lot to me that later on in life, she said she can't sing it anymore because it means too much. She starts crying in the middle of the song, which again, it's like, that's what music is supposed to do, right?
Absolutely.
Touch people.
Yeah.
And she just related to it so much that she had a hard time getting through it without crying.
Wow. Unbelievable. And you've talked to her and
yeah, in fact, I went to her 80th birthday party, and that was great as well. You know, she's you know, much older and frail now, and not in great health. But a lot of people were there, including Stevie Wonder, who got up and did his happy birthday. Of course, you know, yeah. Happy birthday! Oh man, he tore it up. Everybody just got on their feet after that. I mean, come on,
yeah,
you can't do anything after Stevie Wonder gets up
there.
That's
right. That's right.
But yeah, it's just really cool to be part of something bigger than yourself. And music, I think can afford artists to do that.
Yeah, and to come, you know, I mean, in some way full circle in a lot of these situations with, you know, being influenced by Nat King Cole and then working with Natalie and then, you know, influenced by Oscar Peterson and Anita O'Day saying, you remind me of him. Mm-hmm. And then being able to write a song that then you give to one of the great singers of all time, Nancy Wilson, and then she immediately records it and says it means too much. I mean, it's unbelievable.
It really is, yeah. And there are moments like that in L.A. that feel like everything's coming into place, you know. And then there are other moments where you think, how am I going to pay my rent, you know. and that's where this next song actually comes from, Prue's Blues, because it talks about the woes of being a musician and all the financial things that we have to go through to make our art and to get this love of music out there to the people.
Will some kind soul please tell me what in the world is going on? The ego flies on Friday, by Tuesday my cash is all gone. I don't quite understand it, it makes me upset. The more harder I work, the behinder I get. I can't plan a real vacation, I bust my chops to make the rent. The way my landlord's talking, he could hike me 30%. I max out on my credit, I'm swimming in debt. The more harder I work, the behinder I get. I remember when, the way it used to be, you could stretch a dollar bill from sea to shining sea. If I could fix this picture, you can believe I surely would. 'Cause right around the corner, I might bump into something so good. Until that great day happens, I duly regret. The more harder I work, the behinder I get. The more harder I work, the behinder I get. The more harder I work, the behinder I get.
The harder I work, the behinder I get.
Yeah. The more harder I work.
Oh, the more harder.
The more harder I work, the behinder I get.
And that's those aren't your lyrics.
No, those are K. Lawrence Dunham's lyrics.
Yeah.
Again, I told them I wanted to write something about, you know, the difficulties sometimes of being a musician and the financial things we deal with to do our art, you know. And so he said, well, let's see, blues, We'll call it Prue's Blues.
That fast.
Yeah, exactly.
So now you're here in Kalamazoo, you're back in Michigan, and you're studying at Western. And I remember when I found out, I didn't really know you. I guess we knew each other a little bit, or we'd seen each other at conferences or things.
Right.
And then I heard John Prue's coming to Western to get his master's degree. He's moving back from LA. What? He's going to come study? I mean, it was really beautiful. And you're here and you're studying, you're getting your master's degree, and you're directing GC2.
Right. Yeah, it was really cool how it came about. I was, I've been teaching adjunct in LA for many years. I was at three different schools at one time. I was working at Azusa Pacific University. I was working at Cal State Long Beach, Cal State Fullerton, bouncing around. I called it the adjunct shuffle. That's another tune I got to write. But anyway, I don't know. I just felt like I felt like I couldn't really invest in any one place because I was bouncing around to so many. And so I feel like in order to do that and to teach more at one place, I had to have a master's degree in order to get some more full-time work. And so we just, you know, I just sang Prue's Blues about how the rent increased and everything. That was before my rent actually increased. And so it did happen right around the time when I was looking for some other options. And Greg Jaspers, who I also knew from not only Michigan, but also LA, said, well, you know, you could come here to do your master's. And, you know, I have family in Grand Rapids, so that would help out with my kids and everything else. So it came at the right time. Our rent was increased substantially, and we knew we were going to have to do something, move somewhere, and it just felt like the right move. So we're back here. It's already been a year. I can't believe it's flown by so much. I sang in Gold Company last year for the full year and played piano with them too, and now and directing GC2 has been a lot of fun. So I'm getting the full experience here at Western, and my younger brother Dave actually went here for his undergrad and played in Gold Company. So again, you talk about that full circle thing. You know, here I am back here. He was here. Jen went here. You went. You know,
yeah.
It's interesting.
Oh, that's great. So you have a lot of projects happening, though. You've got this new project you were telling me about, this Gershwin project.
Yeah. So when I was working, and I forgot to mention this, but I had this cool gig talking about meeting important people. I met Michael Feinstein when I lived in L.A., and he offered to have me open for him in New York back in 2009 for 2 weeks. And that went so well that the manager at the time said, we're looking for somebody to do a steady 4-month, 5-night-a-week gig in the hotel. Would you be interested? And I said, yeah, I would. And so I did that for 4 months, lived in the hotel, played every night before dinner and then like a late night set kind of thing. And Michael has been a big supporter of and mentor of mine over the years. In fact, he recorded a song with me on my third album, Two of a Kind. So it's a fun little duet that we sang together. But where was I going with this story? Michael Feinstein.
Gershwin.
Oh, Gershwin, yes. Well, Michael worked with Ira Gershwin. He was his librarian. And so when I was working at Feinstein's, there was a producer named Jack Lewin who used to come out to hear me a lot. And he had a show called Our Sinatra that he produced. And so in this last year, Jack and I stayed in touch over the years. And he said, you know, I'm thinking of doing an all Gershwin show with two pianos. Would you be interested? And I said, well, I'd love to. I said, but, you know, I also sing. And he knew that. He said, well, I haven't thought about that. Two piano players, singers. Well, who else would you ask? And at the time, Tony DeSere came to mind. He was another great New York piano player singer. And so we actually started working on this project, Tony and I, for a little while. But because of some health reasons, he ended up having to bail. And we ended up getting this singer named Champion Fulton, who's a great piano player singer, did some research and asked around, and she came highly recommended. And so we had never worked together before. She flew to Grand Rapids. We rehearsed, and it went great. So I did all the arrangements for it. There's, I don't know how many Gershwin tunes, maybe 50 or so. I mean, there's so many we had to include in the show. It has to be 80 minutes, pretty much exactly that. And I did a bunch of medleys. I do a cool version of Rhapsody in Blue that's a Duke Ellington version that I transcribed and then adapted for two pianos and added my own middle section and end. But we just debuted it in New York City at Birdland Theater last week. And did very well. The Gershwin Initiative is actually behind this. So they were there they're based at U of M actually here in Michigan. So again, Michigan connection. And they asked if we would do this for their fundraising event at Birdland. So the opening night was for the Gershwin Initiative. So Gershwin scholars were there that night. So the pressure was on.
Wow.
And then the next night was open to the public. And so it went very well. And the hope is that we can tour this show around to various places and maybe performing arts centers. It has some legs, and it's actually, there's some patter, the things that we say in between each song that was written by a guy from the New York Times, Will Friedwald, who's written many books on jazz and that kind of thing. So it's a real collaboration between the producer, me, Champion, and Will, who's a contributing writer.
So how long did it take you to prepare the music and arrange and do research?
Oh, gosh. Many, many months, but probably 5 months altogether to get everything happening. And then, you know, we tweaked things as we rehearsed. But yeah, it's a lot of things to remember up there when you have all these medleys and what comes next and what key are we in, and, you know. So that was a real challenge, but I'm happy to say that it went well, and I'm looking forward to seeing what else we can do with this.
Well, that's got to be fun, though, to dig in like that to one composer or subject like that and just, you know, become an expert on it in some way, you know?
Yeah, there are some songs that I didn't really know that the Gershwins wrote, or, you know, songs that that Ira wrote with other composers besides George.
Really?
Things like that. So it was really enlightening to read about and to research and to write. And for me, too, writing the arrangements was a lot of fun. I mean, I love arranging and coming up with different ways of putting songs together like we do. I've Got a Crush on You mixed with Isn't It a Pity, which that works out really well, those two tunes. And at the end, I combine it where we're singing the song simultaneously, and I worked it out with the chord changes where it all works together. So I'm actually going to do that at my graduate recital.
Are you?
Next year.
A Gershwin mashup.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there's a joke about that, too, in the show. It starts with a medley, and then she says, no, it's not a medley, it's collage. And no, it's not a collage. Now it's a mashup. It's funny you use that word. That's part of the show. You didn't even know it.
I'll have to see it. Oh, that's great. Well, do you have a favorite Gershwin song?
Oh, man, there's so many. But, I mean, one of the favorites that I love to sing and I love to play is Embraceable You. Just a beautiful song.
Yeah. For some reason, that was coming to my mind as well.
Oh, really?
I thought, you're probably going to say Embraceable You, but... what was the most obscure tune that you found that you really like now?
I'd probably say Stairway to Paradise, which is something that I never heard before, and it has a verse and everything that's kind of interesting. But it's really like kind of like Doxy, you know, that song that
really?
Sonny Rollins sang. It's very similar to that in terms of it's a 16-bar tune. It's very short, but it's really bluesy, and it doesn't sound like a Gershwin tune, but it's really hip and interesting.
Wow. Is that from a show or anything like that, or just...
Stairway to Paradise, that was one that was written with Buddy De Silva, as well as Ira went by the pseudonym Arthur Francis, which was the names of the two other Gershwin siblings, Arthur, who's the younger brother, and Francis, who was a baby sister. So,
wow.
So if you just saw the name, you wouldn't know it's Ira Gershwin, but yeah, Ira and Buddy De Silva both wrote the lyrics.
Wow.
To that with George.
See, those kind of little tidbits of information like that, that's totally fascinating.
Oh,
to
yeah.
Me.
Yeah, I love that stuff. And and Michael Feinstein is an expert at that kind of thing. And so when I was working at his club, like that was really like going to school, because not every night, but oftentimes he would come in to listen to me. And you can't just say, this is a song I like. I mean, you have to say, who wrote the song? And that's all that information is really good for students to know. That's something that I try to pass on to my students as well. Just knowing a little bit of background on what you're singing, why you're singing it, what does it mean, all those things.
Yeah. So we'll have to look for you on the road with this Gershwin. It's called A Gershwin Celebration.
It's called Here to Stay, you know, of course, from our Levis, Here to Stay. Here to Stay, two pianos, two voices, A Gershwin Celebration.
And you're still working with Melissa Manchester.
Still working with Melissa. In fact, we have a gig coming up in Utah in a couple weeks. And so, yeah, that's still going.
Great. And if the listeners want to look you up, which I'm sure they will, and find out more about your music and buy your music, they can go to johnprue.com.
Mm-hmm.
And And you should know, John Prue is, it's not spelled like you think it is.
No,
so it's
not,
John.
Not P-R-U or P-R-O-O. It's P-R-O-U-L-X. So you can think of pro and then Oaks, I guess. But it's just Prue. I don't know. I got to try to remember how to do it. But yeah, so J-O-H-N-P-R-O-U-L-X. Just johnprue.com, or you can email me at john@johnprue.com. You can also go to artistshare.com and look up me there. That's where my latest album is. Or on iTunes or Spotify. There's even a Pandora station if you type in John Prue. So that's kind of cool.
It's a John Prue station?
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
It's fun. It's fun to see, like, who do they pair me up with? Oh, Chet Baker. Oh, that's cool.
Well,
or,
yeah.
You know.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Well, let's play something to end the show here.
Yeah, well, I think this last tune is kind of fitting because it's a song, again, written with K. Lawrence Dunham. It's from my Chet Baker album. I just mentioned Chet. And also, most recently, it was there was a vocal jazz arrangement of this song by alumni Jennifer Barnes for her group. And so I'd like to do it for you now. It's called Before You Know It.
When you're having a gloomy day, here's the answer to shoo the blues away. You sing a swinging tune, then you'll be smiling soon. Before you know it, you'll start laughing out loud. If the weather looks gray ahead, and you're thinking you should have stayed in bed, you find a happy song and tap your foot along. Before you know it, you'll be out in the sunshine, carefree, having a great time, just like me, chasing the blues away.
Prue, thanks so much for sharing your artistry with us today. It's been great to have you.
Thanks so much, Keith.